Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Book Talk with Lawrence J. King. From coast to coast, across the nation, Lawrence is an internationally known six-time published author. Book Talk highlights published authors from the local, regional, national, and international scene, as well as showcasing musicians and people of interest in a positive and productive way. Give a rockin' warm welcome to your host, Lawrence J. King.
All right. This is Lawrence J. King in the house, the host of Book Talk Radio. And today, it is our honor and our privilege to have with us Ken Tucker, a.k.a. Mr. Bluesman. He's an outstanding blues singer, songwriter, and producer. And so, back by popular demand, let's get him back on the show and do a little bit more Q&A with him and see what's going on in his life. How you doing, Ken? You with us today, buddy?
Hey, buddy, what's happening?
You are, man. What's going on?
Not much. Just chilling out. I got to go in the studio again tomorrow and work on my album some more. But, I don't produce. I'm not a producer. I'm absolutely not a producer. I'm just a singer, songwriter, musician. I wouldn't know the first thing about producing anything except maybe flatulence.
Well, my bad. I mean, you produced amazing songs.
You're cool, man. No worries. I just want to make sure no one's calling me and say, hey, I need you to produce an album. I said, good luck.
Yeah, I hear you. But so tell us about your best experience that you've ever had when you were playing live on stage somewhere.
Oh, I was always with Larry Norman, dude. Playing for him was just an absolute honor and a joy. He was one of the most amazing human beings that ever lived, and I miss him terribly. But every show we played, he was just really laid back. It kind of gave us the freedom to express ourselves. There was, of course, songs have chordal structure, you know, but I mean, as far as lead guitar playing, you know, Herbie and I had, Herbie Manapudi was his other lead guitar player, and Herbie and I have done a lot of shows together with Larry. And, you know, also Lisa Weyerhaeuser, who introduced me to Larry Norman. But when we were playing, just Larry said, hey, man, just play lead. You know, I'll tell you, you know what key it's in, and do your thing. And he was always very complimentary, very generous. So, yeah, I had a little over four years of just wonderful times with that guy.
That's awesome. So who all have you performed with? Different people and things.
Okay, well, I was on stage with John Mullins and Lindsay L. I was in her band. I was hired to be in her band. I hired the band for her for a festival that was in Bloomington, Indiana. And so playing for her was cool. She's now the MC of Canada's Got Talent. And she hit really big about a year and a half, 2 years after, you know, we played on stage, but we're still acquaintances. Let's put it that way. You know, she knows who I am, and we were good. Then I was on stage with Daryl Mansfield, and he's like one of the greatest blues harmonica players that has ever been, and a great singer. Oh my goodness, he's a great singer. And played on stage with the late Harvey Jett. Who else did I play with? He was a Black Oak Carpenter, Harvey Jett was. And just, you know, my friend Harry Gore, he's my friend now. I was a fan, and I met him in 2001. And I was a fan of his before I met him, and he was strangely a fan of mine, and we didn't know each other personally until that time. Then, so I played on stage with him a lot during festivals over here in Illinois. He lives in Virginia, and I live right by Illinois. So there's a festival that he plays every year, and he always invites me to play along with him, and I do when I can. And, oh, goodness, there's – if I'm forgetting one, I'll – I'll kick myself. But a lot of people, I opened for Ashley Cleveland. I opened for, my band opened for Audio Adrenaline when they were going. I played at King Biscuit Blues Festival 2 years in a row. And I got to share the stage with my guitar mentor, one of my idols on the guitar, Tracy Garcia, who is just one of those guys that should be famous, but he's not. He's a homebody. He's just an incredible, incredible world-class guitar player. And, but, you know, if I think of somebody else in the middle of a question or a sentence, I'll just scream it out, and you'll know, oh, that's who I forgot.
That'd be fine. That's cool.
So, I did have Willie Dixon's backup band when I played at Chess Records in Chicago. So, yeah, I played with some of my blues idols. The rhythm section for Willie Dixon was on stage. I was on stage with those boys, and it was like living a dream, dude. I'm telling you, these guys were – I played their records when I was a teenager. And so that's another one.
Huh. So how do you compose your songs? Like – is it you've lived some of this stuff? You sing the blues?
Oh, some of it, yes. Some of it, no. Some of it is from my life, like the song One Stop Man's a love song for my wife. And, you know, different things I pull for aspects from my life, and but also either, you know, like this whole album is going to be, this whole album as a concept album that has a story arc. And my blues name, I'm using that for the fictional character that's the Stormy Blue, you know, the legend of Stormy Blue. And it just follows his rise and the fame and his fall from glory. And so, but I compose, you know, just sometimes I think of a scenario or I come up with a cool title. And, you know, and I just go from that. You know, there's no set formula. It's all based on inspiration and what the inspiration is for each song initially, and you just build on that inspiration. It could be lyrical, it could be musical, it could be melodic or harmonic. You know, it could be either based on a lead lick or a chord progression, or you just have some weird lyric pop in your head and you sing it out. Oh, that sounds pretty cool. I'll make a song like that. I'll write a song with that line. You know, whatever. Right? So, like I said, I don't sit down. I haven't gone to write songs today. You know, they usually come to me at the worst possible times. Like when I was, for example, One Stop Man, the lyrics came to me just like someone poured them in my head from a bucket, except for the last line. And I was driving at night. I had no way to write it down. And my wife, I don't think we even had paper or pen in there. You know, we were just driving along. And I told her, I got these lyrics, and I need a fourth line to the song. It's a love song about you, but I don't know what to write for the final line. And she said, well, what's it called? So it's called One Stop Man. So we'll write a line about a gas station because gas stations are called one stops. So I said, well, I will do that, and I'll give you credit for it. And so I came up with the line, and I told it back to her. I said, do not give me credit for that. And so I do anyway. You know, I always do. I point her out at every gig. This woman wrote the last line of this song, and I want you to dig on it. And, you know, she gets all, turns her head and stuff. And sometimes I get yelled at. Sometimes I don't.
I hear you. So Ken, how are you doing physically? Are you able to perform for regular lengthy shows and stuff since your accident?
I'm kind of working back to that. I've already played one show. It was 3 hours. And, of course, you know, I had to have my cane to walk in. And I really can't do stairs very good anymore. Set me up. It was a two-story venue, and they usually have music upstairs. And they looked at my cane and how I was walking. They said, we'll set you up downstairs. So they pulled the sound gear down, which was cool. And I did a solo gig for 3 hours. Now, it was... after the second hour, it was quite uncomfortable because I had to stretch my leg and my hip. But, you know, I mean, overall, I took it as good as I possibly could. You know, I walked out without any trouble. And it was just after about 35 minutes, you know, if I don't change my leg position, aka really start cramping up. So I had to kind of move about, you know. But otherwise, it went really well. I mean, I played better than I thought I would be able to at this point. And I'm still kind of rebuilding my fretting hand, because I remember what I played, but I'm just a little sloppier than I used to be. I'm trying to strengthen that up so I can play things cleaner and with more confidence.
I heard that. So what's next for Ken Tucker? What's going on?
Recording an album, working on some video, doing interviews. Right. I got a new producer for my documentary. He took it over because the guy who originally was producing it got a full-time job, and he's working on other films. So I said, hey, man, our friend will work on it. So he transferred all the stuff over to him, and we're doing Zoom interviews now. And for that, and like I said, just all that. So, you know, working on the album, working on the documentary, and I'm going to be meeting with a new management company who's going to hopefully put us on their roster. And, but I think it's a very positive first meeting we had, and we're scheduling a lunch or dinner meeting to likely discuss the contractual details. But it looks like we'll be with this new company. And I'm still with my record label, still in my same record label over in Austria, CountZeroRecords.com. I do have a signature line of guitars through Moon Guitars. I'm endorsing them officially, and they decided to let me have my own signature line, the Ken Tucker. I think it's going to be called the Troublemaker KT. And I'm getting the first one with the serial number. And, you know, Kyle Wolf over at Moon Guitars is a great guy. Definitely check out moon-guitars.com. And then I also want to, you know, I'm still working with, so I have a working relationship with Rocky Mountain Slides. Great guys, great slides, you know. I won't play, honestly, when I got the first slide and I played it, it was like, I don't want another slide ever. This is the one I want. And so we talked about it, and I said, look, I'd like to endorse you. He said, oh, sure, that's a good thing. So I even got my own signature lines of slides through Rocky Mountain Slides. You can find those at rockymountainslides.com. And you can see my record label at countzerorecords.com. I think I covered all the bases.
Wow. That's doing it, man. Your own signature guitars. That's awesome.
Well, I found out, you know, it's funny, we were talking when I first called him. He goes, I can't believe I'm talking to you. I said, why is that? He goes, my boss where I worked before used to listen to your Looking for a Brighter Day album all the time. And I heard your album, your music. I was a fan of your music back in 2006, 2007. And he goes, it's just crazy. I'm talking to you. I said, well, I'm glad you're enthusiastic. I wish people around my hometown were that enthusiastic. But he's Kyle Wolf is a real cool dude. He's like I said, part of what's going on with me. I'm just trying to get gigs, man. And got a great bass player in Jim Wooten. Got a great drummer in Jimbo Alonso. Man, just a really good rhythm section that works together, that clicks real good. And, they make it easy for me to play lead guitar because, you know, they take care of the bottom. And I don't have to worry about one of them, you know, on a regularly going, like, I don't worry about Jim going out of key. And I don't worry about Jimbo dropping beats. Jim's really good with a groove. and he can play any kind of thing from country to blues to R&B to rock. And he is a great blues player. And so I don't have to worry about him. And that's always a good thing, because if your rhythm section stinks, it doesn't matter how good a guitar player you are, you're going to stink too. But if you've got a great rhythm section, you can be an average guitar player, and they'll make you sound like the most amazing thing that ever lived.
I hear you. Tell me about the concept of this entire project that's coming up, Bob.
Okay. Well, I'll go back a few years when I was walking around. There was a big concert going on with Blind Mississippi Moore, the legendary blues man from Memphis. My buddy Larry Long plays drums for him. And so I was up there talking to him, talking to Larry and Morris. And Larry asked me if I had a blues name. At that point, I didn't. And he said, "Hey, Morris, Ken doesn't have a blues name. We give him one." He goes, "Yeah, that's a guy, Stormy Blue." So I officially became, because, you know, I had a real blues man give me the name, which is kind of like a passing the torch, or not bad. It's like the, you know, it's like getting a well, you know, this is Stormy Blue. You know, it's a real name. That's my real blues name. So I started using it for things, and I thought, you know, it'd be a cool concept. I want to do a concept album anyway, because I was a fan of, like, Dark Side of the Moon and Sgt. Pepper and the Pet Sounds and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, well, it'd be cool. It'd be a concept blues album. And basically, the general, to summarize it real short, it's about a blues man named Stormy Blue with his, in his peak of fame and power. He's using drugs and alcohol very, very prodigiously. And he starts losing friendships and relationships and business slowly over time. And it starts out at the top. And the last song he does, the last song we do on the album, is an acoustic version of the first song. That's real high energy, slide ridden, something like We Can't Heat would have done at Woodstock. That has that whole vibe, and it ends with him doing the same song acoustically in a small club. So it goes from him playing for 20, 30,000 people down to playing for 20 or 30. And then the last thing you hear on the album is him getting up from the stage, going through the back door, door shutting, him walking away down a wet alley in the rain and hearing a dog bark in the distance. And that's how the album ends.
What a concept.
But, you know, like, it starts out with him losing his wife, losing his, through the death of a parent. You know, he starts getting depressed, and then he starts getting in trouble with venues for being drunk or high on the job, and they have to go in there every time and almost shock him to awake with, you know, stuff. And then it gets to the point where he's breaching contracts, and he loses his band, and then his manager is the only one that sticks with him. Because but it ends with him pretty much being alone, living like an everyday local weekend warrior musician. From being like world famous and on top of everything.
Is this like a true story? Or
No, it's all fictional, buddy. It's all fictional. The guy's called Stormy Blue. That's what he goes by. That's what the legend of Stormy Blue. And then the next album is going to be a continuation of this. We're even doing videos. We're shooting videos for the album and stuff.
Who's performing on your new album? And are you going to have any special guests?
Well, yeah, you know, I have some special guests. Jimbo and Jim, you know, are playing the drums and bass, respectively. And they're doing a great job. Oh, my gosh, it's wonderful. And then I got I'm waiting on some performance. Kay Leck, he's a Japanese blues guitar player. I wrote a song specifically. I left a spot for him specifically on the song to play a killer lead part, which he delivered. Kay and I are on the same record label. And Kay lives in Japan. I live here. And so he delivered a killer lead break. And the song's called Japanese Hot Special, about a guy who falls in love with a Japanese girl that just moved into his neighborhood. And he's singing her praises, you know. But I thought it'd be cool to have my buddy, because I let him hear the song, goes, "That's a great song. That's a great song." And I said, "I just want to make sure he didn't offend anybody." He goes, "No, how would it offend you? You're singing about how beautiful this Japanese girl is. Nothing offensive about that." And I said, "Well, you want to play on it?" He goes, "Absolutely." And so We sent him the tracks, and he provided. And I have a friend in Knoxville, Tennessee, who is a phenomenal singer and piano player, and he's going to put some piano parts on my album, working with possibly getting Joe Young to play B3 organ and saxophone. And I got my own student, Sarah Laredo, singing a duet with me. And Sarah can sing, she can sing the rocks off a mountain, dude. She is unbelievable. Just one of those young people that had just a natural ability. She was, didn't have to be taught. She couldn't have been taught this beautiful voice. She got an amazing voice that is just all natural. And she's fantastic. And she's going to be singing a duet with me.
That's awesome. So,
I got a fiddle player named Isaiah Fortoso. Isaiah has been playing fiddle, and he's a great fiddle player. I knew I'd forget somebody. I knew I would, but I cannot forget Isaiah.
I heard that. So is your documentary going to be a true story?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm basically talking about how I had to overcome obstacles my whole life. I mean, to reach where I am. And, I grew up, I was a fat kid in a school that was full of athletes that worshiped athletics, and I was a nerd. I was an artist and trying to be a musician. I liked fantasy stuff like Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of garbage. And I was socially awkward. And I didn't know how to talk to girls, and I was just absolutely terrorized my whole school. Yeah, God, I was a little fat kid. But it talks about when I left there, and I left being at home. And I was going out to living in the dormitories like a big boy, right? I made a vow that, number one, I would not be anyone's doormat anymore, and that I'm willing to fight for my right to be treated with respect. And I did that a couple times, and I won each time. I was going to basically be Mr. Upfront, in the mix of everything, and being a social, rather than a social butter. I wasn't going to be a wallflower. I was going to be a social kind of guy who wasn't afraid to talk to anybody. And I just, I also decided, because I was told my whole life that I was too fat, too stupid, too ugly, and I'll never make anything of myself. And being in music, for a guy like me, I was, I had a group of guys that I used to play guitar with, and sometimes they didn't want to deal with me, so I used to hide and pretend they weren't home. After I walked 2 miles carrying my stuff to his house, I knocked on the door, and they wouldn't answer, and then I'd go, and his brother finally said, yeah, they would hide from me and pretend they weren't home. But my guitar mentor, Tracy Garcia, never did that to me. Every time I went to his house with my gear in hand, I said, can I jam with him? He goes, yeah, come on in. We'll jam. He never once turned me away. So I, back one day, I said, if I ever make anything of myself, I'm going to take you along. And he kind of giggled like, man, this is Solomon, dude. You're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get out of Indiana, because Indiana's nowhere. But I was just developing the kind of determination I would just say, look, I'm going to do it, and no one's going to stop me. So I had to use all those people saying, you'll never do it. You can't do it. You're too fat, too stupid, too ugly. I said, I don't believe that's not true, and I'm going to take control of everything. And my God, when I did that, I mean, people started taking me seriously. I was getting dates out of the butt in my freshman year. It was nuts. So I met my ex was from, when I was a freshman, and she was a junior, and we dated for two and a half years, and thankfully got two lovely kids out of the deal. But even when I met my wife, I wasn't afraid to talk to her, and that's from just making the decision that I'm not going to be pushed around, and I'm not going to believe all the negative things people said about me, because I know I'm smart, I know I'm talented. I might not be pretty, but by God, I'm aggressive, I guess, or I'm confident. That should be the word I use, confident. Because I wasn't so aggressive. Mm-hmm. I just, like, either go out with me or don't. I don't care. It's up to you. You know, I was there hemmed and hawed. It was about 30% of the time I got a yes. You know, numbers. That's all the numbers back then. You know, it's like I'm 19 years old. I'm going to find a date, and if it takes me asking 50 people, I'm going to ask 50 people. And so, you know, that's how I was. And but as you mature, you know, as I matured, I just kept the determination, and I kept my attitude that, you know, I'm no worse than anybody else. I'm no better than anybody else. And I have as much a chance as anybody to do anything I want. It's up to me. Ultimately, everything, good or bad, is up to me in my life. If I do something stupid and I pay for it, there you go, hence being crippled. But if I do something smart, something with good intention and using my talent and something good comes of it, hey, that's great. That's because I worked my butt off to do something that was significant. And so that's how I look at everything. And that's how I, you know, talk to my kids. And some listen, some don't. But, yeah, so that's pretty much me, you know.
Sounds like a good time to me. I mean, you face
well,
it.
Well, you know, it's
you
a
know.
Good time. As a good time as you make it, brother. I mean, you can make it a great time. You can laugh off. You can look at setbacks and realize that setbacks are temporary. Everything is temporary. You know, this too shall pass. And just laugh it off, and it's like we'll deal with it. You know, we're just going to deal with it. And when something good happens, we celebrate in it. And I don't believe in whining, and I don't believe in making excuses. Like I tell my students, you either make it happen or you make excuses, you know. So I just think I live every day for the day. You know, I have plans, but I honestly, especially after being at rec, plans are just that. They're just plans. So this is what I plan on doing if all things fall into place. But you know, and we all, especially in the music business, you know, you have to make short-term plans, medium-term plans, and long-term plans. Because you get to long-term plans through short-term plans. But my whole philosophy just runs, you know, I'm a Christian, so I pray every day. I'm very devout in my Christianity. I don't shy from anybody who is not, but I share my Christianity to a point where, you know, I don't think annoying somebody, but, you know, but I live my faith, and I love everybody, and I'm not the kind of guy to beat you down with a Bible and choke you out. So I have lots of atheist friends. I have lots of gay friends. I have lots of friends who are just all different religions. And I just believe in loving them. I love them all. And they know that, and I respect them. And so that's, you know, but that's it.
I heard that. You know, everything that's put in our path is not necessarily meant to destroy our path. Sometimes it's meant to clear the path for something bigger and better.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. I try to be friendly with everybody, and I think I'm pretty successful at it. Even if I don't agree with them, I try to encourage every musician because every musician is on their own journey, you know. And I don't believe in saying somebody stinks or somebody is just amazingly, you know. Everybody is in the music business, in the performing business, we're all at a certain level in our part of our journey. And I don't think someone who, because when I was 14 and 15, 16, I was just a glorified noisemaker, dude. I had no idea what I was doing except making noise that sounded cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back to determination again, where I thought I wanted to be a professional guitar player. And I know my parents were so enthusiastic about that as well. Not really. But I thought, if I'm going to make a living at this, I daggum well better learn this instrument top to bottom, back and forth, inside and out. And so I made it my goal to understand the mechanics of the fretboard and also learn picking techniques. And I'm just what they call, I was woodshed, you know. There's no substitute. I don't care who says it on YouTube or anywhere else. There's no substitute for sitting down and just learning the fretboard and learning scales and different modes, major, minor pentatonic, you know, augmented, diminished, Phrygian, Dorian, different modes like that. If you take time and really absorb and learn an instrument like I did, I'm not saying I'm great. I'm saying I really understand it, though, ad nauseum, because I was that intent to learn it. And I wanted to be absolutely the best player I could possibly be. And so I'm still aiming for that goal, because I'll never be as good as I want to be. It's impossible. If a musician says to you that they're good enough, then they're not that good, because real musicians are always striving for beyond where they are. And so, yeah, that's me again. It's just sheer determination and sheer will and just a desire to know what I needed to know and more to be the best I could be on stage and in the studio.
Yeah. Where can our listening audience buy your music?
Pardon?
Where can our listening audience buy your music?
Working and listening what?
I said, where can our listening audience buy your music?
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about that. They can go to www.countzerorecords.com. And they just do a search on me. You know, they do a search for Ken Tucker, and they'll find me. And they'll be able to buy my latest albums from Count Zero. I have an acoustic album called Naked. I have a greatest hits album, and I also have the album Come On Over, and I'm working on the fourth right now. But those are available for Count Zero, and then get my merchandise, brother. Got all kinds of merchandise. Coffee cups, bikinis, everything. Everything from coffee cups to bikinis. It is ridiculous. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants with my massive logo on it, KTB.
Huh. That's all right. So do you sell these things all over the world? Or?
Well, the record label does, yes. If you get them here in America, you have to pay a fee. What's it called? What kind of fee is that? Like when you go overseas, sell something, mail something overseas. It's
handling fee, shipping.
No, it's like a shipping fee, but it's international. Customs. I have to pay customs fee.
Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, basically what you buy off of Count Zero is you buy the digital part. Yeah, you can buy my album one song at a time or the whole thing digitally. Actually, you can do all
of
that.
Are you on SoundCloud?
I believe so. I do believe I am, yes. And I'm also on Apple Music and Walmart and about every major cyber retailer there is. You can find me on somewhere. It might be buried in the archive of obscurity, but it's there, most of them.
So is your new album, is it finished or it's in the works right now? And
yeah, it's about 65% finished, tracking-wise. I'm going to do some of the songs by myself, about two or three of them. But the ones with the band is about, I think, 75% finished. Then we're going to do about two more songs with the band. And then I've got to do two. I'm going to do two or three solo for the end of the album.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And probably what, July or something?
Yeah, because it's got to go. My producer is going to do the initial mixing and mastering, and with the files, and I've got to send them to get polished up with our record label affiliate in Seattle. Adrie does that.
I hear you. Well, it sounds like you're doing awesome, bud.
Well, I'm trying. You know, I'm just, like I said, living day by day. I got a beautiful wife, yeah, and I have a nice apartment, so I have nothing to gripe about.
Oh, yeah, they always say, find every good man is a good woman.
Yep. Well, I got the best.
There you go. Can't go wrong, then.
She's trying through for 34 years, brother. I know I got the best.
Wow. That's a celebration worth right there.
Yeah, 35 years in June, on June 11th.
Huh. They say the happy after story don't exist, but it surely does.
Well, I mean, I say more joyful than happy. They sometimes aren't
right.
Happy, but they can be joyful. Joyful is a much more deeply rooted condition than happiness. Happiness is fleeting, but joy is lasting.
Yeah. I hear you. So on that note, we're going to be signing off here. Ken, you got any shout-outs you want to do or plug the
John Russell? John Russell is producing my album. John Russell's a great guy. He's doing both this documentary and the album. John Russell with Torch One Productions in Terre Haute, Indiana. And, of course, shout-out to my lovely wife, Marcia, who supports me all the time. Through thick and thin, she's been there. In fact, it was her idea for me to go full-time after a corporate layoff, a whole department layoff, and I was a victim of that. So you get your guitar and make money. You're not going to fire yourself. So that's what I've done ever since. And, of course, everybody on Count Zero Records, Kyle Wolf at Moon Guitars, and Doc over at Rocky Mountain Slides, and, George and Maggie, George and Meg over at Count Zero. They're the ones who are in charge, and they're great people. And Jim and Jimbo. Can't forget my rhythm section, Jim Wooten and Jimbo Alonso, my great rhythm section. You know, that's why I think people, like, last second, I got to revise everything. But, yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, he's not conceited. He's convinced. This dude's got it going on in a lot of ways. He's going to keep it going on. We've been talking live to Ken Tucker. I call him Mr. Blues Man. He's a shit, a bomb diggity. So get out there and get your copy of his records and keep on playing. So I'll talk to you later, Ken. Maybe do another interview down the line somewhere when you got all this accomplished.
All right, buddy. After I get it finished, I'll let you know.
I appreciate you.
Same here.
All right, with that being said, thank you for tuning in to Book Talk Radio, and tune in next time when you hear me say Book Talk Radio. Thank you, thank you, thank you.